All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Brick by brick, it's been a methodical build in Montreal.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking, presented by Betway. If you're going to place a bet, bet on Betway. Ontario only, 19 plus. Please play responsibly.
Today's guest is longtime player agent Kent Hughes, who is a little more than 2 years into his tenure as general manager of his hometown Montreal Canadiens.
With Kent Hughes... I've heard that you hired your best friend.
No offense, but Kent is not my best friend. I just admired him as a hockey person and as a person, and I trusted his opinion.
It's been a big transition for Hughes, who works hand-in-hand with close friend and Canadiens executive vice president of hockey ops, Jeff Gorton. It's been a bigger transition for the most storied franchise in the sport. What we've seen in Montreal isn't just a full-scale rebuild, but a complete and total change in approach for the Habs, who after 24 Stanley Cups, measured success for the longest time not based on rounds won, but banners hung in the Bell Centre.
Canadiens have won the Stanley Cup, and they're out there bombing each other.
Now, it's about building up to create a team that has an authentic and sustainable chance to win. It's a tenure so far that hasn't been without criticism, including by some who wonder why Kent Hughes has acquired former clients. And we got into that. You don't have to squint like you're staring at a solar eclipse to see all of the pieces coming together. One of the biggest started with hiring Hockey Hall of Famer Marty St. Louis as coach, despite not having any previous pro coaching experience. Hughes has traded away a slew of players, collected picks, and packaged others for potentially pivotal young talent that has unfortunately suffered unlucky injuries to start their careers as Canadians. And in a spine-tingling moment, Hughes parted with consensus to select Juraj Slafkovský with the number one overall pick in the 2022 NHL Draft in an electric Bell Center.
Les Canadiens de Montréal sont fiers de repêcher Juraj Slafkovský.
With his second full season coming to a close, I recently sat down with Hughes to discuss the arrival of Slafkovský, the power of communication in both player development and getting a hockey mad market on board with their plan, making hard decisions, and an impending logjam on defense that is sure to become a storyline in the very near future. Here's my conversation with Montreal Canadiens general manager Kent Hughes. Kent, Kent, as manager of a team that's already been eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs, usually this time of year would not be very exciting for you, but you've had a plan and now you have an opportunity to watch it kind of come together a little bit. David Reinbacher is in your facilities now, Lane Hutson not too far away, and we're seeing Juraj Slafkovský blossom right before our eyes. What's this last few weeks been like for you?
We're excited. We're excited to continue to add some of the young hockey players that we hope are going to be part of our core for a long time to come. So there's certainly excitement and enthusiasm from that perspective, but we've also seen growth in terms of the group that's here. I don't mean that just on an individual level, but collectively, like, they're playing better hockey. You're starting to see them maybe have a better grasp of what the coaching staff wants, and probably an adjustment by the coaching staff as well in terms of what can be incorporated, where things have lacked, or maybe they just don't transfer well. So they've made whatever necessary adjustments. So we're seeing growth on a lot of levels that are reason for optimism here.
So how do you size up this season overall? I mean, you mentioned the growth that you've had, and obviously development isn't always a straight line, and this is a tough league to do that in and continue to grow. What would you say you've learned about your team through this juncture of the season?
It's hard to sit here when you're at the bottom of the pile, you're a bottom 10 team again, and try to sell this optimism. We're optimistic for what our future may be. We have a lot of work to do. We've seen growth individually. Slaf has had a much improved season over last year, probably a much improved second half of the year, or a little more than second half of the year than first half. So you see that with young players where it isn't just year to year. You see it within a year, that type of development. We've seen it with Gouley. Alex Newhook was a new addition to the team, and he had just started to play well, and then he got hurt and missed whatever it was, 30-some games, and he's come back. Recovery from a high ankle sprain, but he's hit the ground running, so Susie's continued to grow his game. Cole has too. I mean, yeah, we want him to score more goals, and I expect that he will, but we've seen a growth in terms of the defensive side of his game, in terms of the non-goal scoring, right? He's got a lot of assists this year. Our decor is, by and large, we've seen last year at times, you could see in moments where it broke down and it was tough, and all of a sudden a close game became a 5-1 game, whereas now we're seeing that they've grown, they've matured, but they've become more resilient against the momentum swings. Even this year, like, we felt like we'd have a good first period and all of a sudden it would swing in the second. Latter part of this season, we've seen them be able to fight those momentum swings.
We'll get into a lot of the players that you just mentioned, but let's start with Slafkovský. I mean, you know, he starts in the league and people are so quick to sort of, you know, label him, and the way that his game has progressed, as you mentioned, not just from year to year, but even these last 2 to 3 months has been certainly really eye-opening. He's got this kind of unique ability, and I'm sure this is a big reason why you decided to select him where you did, is that combination of size and skill that is on display on a nightly basis. What have you liked most about his progression? Because that might have been difficult after the first year. You might get down on yourself. There's a lot that goes into, especially being in your market as a number one pick.
I think the biggest piece, and it was something that we certainly believed when we selected him, is that there's a certain self-confidence that he has and that he carries himself with in this market with that number one overall pick label. Like, I grew up when Doug Wickenheiser in Montreal, when Doug Wickenheiser was that pick, right? The last number one overall pick in this market. Maybe Connor McDavid's the closest thing to hit the ground in the National Hockey League and just have that linear progression. We expected he would stumble. I expect he's going to stumble again at some point in time. The more self-confidence you have, the ability to not self-doubt or not self-doubt to the point it's paralyzing, is so critical. So I think that's one of his greatest qualities. He has that self-confidence. He has a work ethic, and he wants to be part of a team. We interviewed him the last time before selecting him. I asked him what he liked most about playing hockey. You know, for some, it's scoring goals, or it is what it is. And for his answer was being on the ice at the end of a game, whether we're winning or losing by a goal. That's a confidence, but somebody who wants to impact the game.
You mentioned the interview process, and a lot of teams place different values of importance on it. And obviously your scouts throughout the whole scouting process and years of work had spent time not just with him, but getting to know him through others around him. How much of the interview process for you, or getting to know him, helped you know, solidify him as your pick? Like, how much importance did you place on that?
We wouldn't select somebody that was a third round pick on our list, number one overall, by virtue of a solid interview. Clearly, he was in the mix. He brought a unique set of qualities to the table in terms of having the skill, but also being that big and that physically strong. And we projected what he could do for us on the ice if he hit. He brought a unique set of qualities. So we were excited about the player. But the interview process kind of provides that confidence to you that the other elements that can derail a hockey career, like, this guy's well equipped to deal with them. He's been away from home since he was 14. He's incredibly independent. He's got that self-confidence and he wants to be part of a team. He wants to win. He wants to affect the outcome of a game. It isn't, I want to win the Maurice Richard or I want to win the Hart Trophy. It's, he wants to win and he wants to be part of that. And if you're trying to build a hockey team, that's what you want. You want people that want to be part of a team and want to contribute to winning. And we've seen that from him.
You were an agent for a long time. You've got hockey playing sons of this age. You've now been in the general manager's chair for a couple years, you know, not just with Slavkovsky, but others. Have you learned anything about how you develop players?
Well, I coached a lot too, Frank. I spent a lot from an agent perspective. I mean, I can remember when I first started thinking we're not going to be able to recruit the volume of players. We're going to be more selective in what we do. Therefore, we need to do everything we can and invest everything we can in maximizing the probability of success with the clients that we had. And, you know, a long time before agents got involved at a high level in developing hockey players, like, we started doing. I remember hiring a guy by the name of Yves Nadeau that was a former Canadian Olympic short track speed skating coach and strength coaches, and then really working with players. I think at a time, some people used to say, this guy thinks he's a coach, not an agent. All you need is somebody to negotiate a contract. In fact, that was a former NHL player, scout for a team, I won't mention names, who recommended to another player that we were recruiting not to go with us for those reasons. So I coached for 20-something years. I coached my kids, but I coached afterwards. And I think all of that, having kids, dealing with players, and then coaching players, gives you a little bit of a more well-rounded perspective in terms of, you know, the different obstacles, the different things that hockey players confront and deal with on a daily basis and trying, in terms of trying to become the best that they can become. And being able to guide them too, right? And help them find their place on a team, understand they're part of a team. You know, Joel Armia is a great example. He in this market, I believe everybody thought he didn't care, he didn't try. Joel needed to find the right place for him mentally where he could perform to his best and live up to his own expectations, never mind the market. And we're seeing it now. This guy cared. He always cared. He's a great person. When you don't feel, when you lack self-confidence and you don't feel good about yourself, your energy sag too. So like the average fan watches it and think this guy doesn't care. It's got nothing to do with not caring. So I guess it's the overall experiences, I think, put me in a position to hopefully understand players from a lot of different perspectives and share it with the coaching staff. And hopefully, I think we have a bright group here that take that approach as well. So we try to draw on it and get the most out of each individually.
It can be difficult at times because at some point you have to make hard choices, right? Whether it's selecting players or whether it's who to keep, who to trade, who to sign. Do you feel like all of those experiences make you more understanding, better listener, more empathetic? What would you put your finger on, you know, what that means in terms of your managerial style?
My kids and my wife would tell you I don't listen. I think my wife bought me a sign saying I'm not arguing, I'm just explaining why I'm right. But yeah, I think empathy and communication, you know, trying to talk to players. The one thing I learned as an agent, when guys are scoring, they don't call. I can remember like when Vinny LeCavalier was fighting with Torts, he called every single day, multiple times a day. Then when he's scoring 40 goals, he can't find him, right? You call and he's too busy. I'm teasing. But over a period of years, you realize that you have to be comfortable dealing with people that aren't happy about things. And you have to be able to tell them things that they don't want to hear in moments when they're not necessarily happy. It can't always be it's everybody else's fault. Once you get to the point that you're more comfortable having difficult conversations, having them with empathy, you know, like sending Joel Armia to the minors was not a fun conversation to have whatsoever, but you got to have it. It's easy to not want to have it. So just say, hey, you're going down, or have somebody send them down. And it's a very short conversation instead of being willing to talk through it. And I think those things are help to a certain degree. And maybe make players feel a little bit more valued, even in difficult circumstances.
To put a bow on the Slafkovský part of our conversation, what is his ceiling? Like, where can he get to?
I think he can be a critical player in critical moments. The regular season is one thing. We need to get to the playoffs at some point here. And when you do, you need people that are going to be able to elevate and impact the game when it's harder, when it's physical. I think this guy has the chance to be a critical component of a team competing for a Stanley Cup.
Another critical component, we mentioned Alex Newhook and the high ankle sprain. He missed 27 games, but when he's been in the lineup, I mean, he's clearly shown some significant growth. What have you seen from him that's allowed him to take a step forward?
Well, I've seen Alex for a long time. He played with my oldest son in his draft year in Victoria in the BCHL. And then, you know, he chose to go to college at Boston College, which is around the corner from our family home. You know, I always believe in hockey, and I've learned more since coming here that there's this exchange that goes on. So you have your amateur group of scouts, and they watch a player and they feel whatever they feel about that player. And then he turns pro and it's like, we hand him off. And then the pro group starts evaluating a player. But the circumstances that a player performs in are different too. I think I've been criticized a little bit about, you know, getting former clients or things of that nature. I had more clients than we have here, or I wouldn't have been in business still. But the fact of the matter is, where there was a client of ours that I feel like I had a pretty good understanding of what their potential was as a player and who they were as people, and felt they had more in them than what they were showing, then we wanted to go out and, you know, if we could find that trade to bring that player in, then we've done that, whether it's a Matheson or a Newhook. You got to be in the right space mentally. You have to be given that opportunity to be what you want to be. And I think in Alex's case, there was a lot of enthusiasm, optimism about him as a hockey player, you know, in his draft year. And then in the 2 years following at Boston College, I believe he was College Hockey Rookie of the Year, his freshman year. And then you get to Colorado, and for the first time in his career, or in a long time, he's not the guy. Right? You're just a piece, and you're trying to find your place in that piece. And you also go to a team that's ready to win. It's not that we're more tolerant than the Colorado Avalanche. It's that we're in different situations, so we can afford to be more tolerant. We can have a player make a mistake and put him back on the ice, and you're trying to win a Stanley Cup. It's harder to do that. So I felt that Alex in this environment was a better environment for him to continue to learn to become the player he could be.
Why would that be a criticism in terms of you potentially going to get former clients? To me, I look at that and I say, you have intel that no one else possibly could have, and you understand the circumstances and could potentially find additional, you know, surplus value in terms of you know there's more there. He's being underutilized. Can we find a way to make this work to our advantage? You're not playing favorites. You're trying to leverage the intel you have with then helping make your team better.
And I have the benefit of having watched not the entirety of their careers. Obviously, I wasn't there when they...
But hundreds of games, probably.
Hundreds.
You're not going to get eight viewings as, you know, not... This isn't critical of other managers, but as they go to make a trade, they might watch 8, 10, 15, 20 games. You've seen this guy for years.
I've made trades where I've had less viewings too. And you put your trust in people that work for you. And I'm a huge believer in familiarity, and familiarity breeds knowledge. Like, the more history you have on a player, the more equipped you are to make the right decision. And that's not rocket science. It is what it is.
But it's also a reminder when we have these conversations, and not just fans, but media want to judge or grade players, circumstances and what players are dealing with are a huge part of what you end up seeing in the production and end result. And you mentioned Colorado, like, let's just trade places. Like, Jonathan Drouin gets out of his situation in Montreal, less pressure, goes to Colorado with some familiar faces, and then takes off again.
100%. And I'm sure Nate MacKinnon was somebody pushing hard internally, saying, I know this guy. I've played with this guy. I know what he has.
Related to Newhook, 2 years in a row, you've traded your first round pick at the draft, I should say, for a young center that can help your team. Could that similar type situation, if you find the right leverage, be in play in your playbook this summer?
We've said for some time now that where we find opportunities to accelerate the rebuild process or build process, whatever you want, whatever terminology you want to use, that we would definitely explore it. We won't do that at the expense of what we're trying to accomplish on a long-term level. 2 years in a row, we found those opportunities where we were willing to give up draft picks or trade other, you know, effectively we traded Romanoff to get a pick to get Doc. It was all kind of interconnected. It wasn't, we got the pick and then made the decision to trade for Doc. So if there's that type of player available to us again that we think could help us next season and could help us into the future as well, then we'll explore it. You know, we were probably also fortunate that in each of those cases, there was a player available.
When you are keeping that long-term future in mind, and I'm sure, you know, when there's different opportunities that come up, whether it's, you know, going after a college free agent or knowing who to re-sign, you've probably got, I'm guessing, some board in your office somewhere that you've got, you know, projected out, hey, this is what we've got in the pipeline. How do you manage that throughout the course of a season when, I guess, different players' stocks are rising and falling and you're seeing stuff happening and developing in real time? How do you sort that all out?
Try not to be overly reactionary. I think it's the nature of sports to be reactionary. There's a lot of pressure to win and to win now. We're probably, to some degree, somewhat shielded from it because we are in this longer term approach right now. But, you know, as things shift, it's easy to sit here and say, you know, we've managed not to be reactionary because we knew there was a timeline to get where we needed to go that we weren't there yet. When you're there and you have greater expectations and all of a sudden things aren't quite going the way that you anticipated in a particular season, which I think most teams go through, when they get to that or they start to turn that corner, you know, at that point in time, I hope we're still capable of having that same patience and willingness to kind of see it through to the other end. But we'll see. But for the time being, we understand, like I said, you know, Slav's had a great second half of the season. I expect that he could come next year and maybe not be great to start the year. Maybe he skips a step along the way and then needs to go back. I don't know whether it's him or Caden Gooley or another young player of ours. I mean, we saw it, I thought, with Arbor Jacki this year where, you know, there are certain things in his game that we felt kind of stalled and we wanted to have him address those, and we sent him to Laval. And to his credit, he went down, he worked hard. You know, we explained what it was in his game, and, you know, our development group that's here in Montreal and in Laval were with him often. The coaching staff in Laval knew what we were expecting of him, and Arbor did. And I think he did a great job, to his credit, of parking his ego going and taking care of business and coming back up.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
So let's talk about that defense core, because it's going to be really fascinating to watch this evolve over the next 12 to 18 months. In your lineup now, younger guys, Harris, Struble, Gouley, Jack Eye, but then right around the corner, Reinbacher, likely Hudson, Barron, Mayu. That's a lot of pieces. How do you make all that work? You can't dress nine defensemen.
In a perfect world, you know, you talked about it earlier that when we've traded for a former client of mine, we had more information. We want to take the time to have the information and make the right decision, especially for defensemen, because defensemen, I think it goes from back out in terms of the timeline for development. So a goaltender, you know, oftentimes it's kind of mid-20s before they're really hitting their spot, and they probably are more effective later. And then I think defense would be that next layer in the forwards. History shows us that the younger guys are able to come in and be more successful quicker. We want to know. We want to know what we have. We don't want to make mistakes in terms of just assuming today that we already know what our decor is going to look like when we're ready to win. And therefore, we're going to trade player X, Y, and Z away. So, you know, as we evaluate each of these guys, we're trying to figure out where they are today and where they can be. You know, who can slot up from the role they're playing today and who's doing well, but at their ceiling. It's going to come back to being patient enough to make sure that we understand what we have and then make the right decisions.
There's such a premium in this league placed on right shot defensemen. So many of those guys that I just mentioned are right shots. Was that by design in acquiring them or drafting them, or was that just picking the best player available and they happen to be that?
I think it's a little bit of both. If somebody's clearly the best player available, you're taking that player, unless, you know, for us, if that best player available was a left shot D, I don't know, maybe we would try to make a trade and trade up and trade back or do something of that nature. I think every team in this league, all things equal, in terms of the talent available or the potential of a player available, will look to what needs they have too.
There's been no shortage of ink spilled on Logan Mayu, and regardless of however the fan base feels about him one way or the other, how impressed have you been with his ability to just park that and perform?
Very much so. In a different way, similar to Slav, in terms of having outside noise to deal with and being able to handle that and play. And I'll tell you, he's done a heck of a lot of work to understand, to better appreciate other perspectives and feelings and understand other people who have experienced it and the type of situations that he was part of and be better for it. And, you know, like we sit here today, we have Rob Ramage who works for us, and I look at him and think, terrible mistake, terrible situation, but he's done a heck of a job educating and helping prevent, and you're never going to eliminate it, right? Like there are going to be other situations like his, but if he helps 10 other people avoid that mistake, then that's a positive in my book. And I think Logan's working to do that. And if he can continue to do that and do what he's doing on the ice, I hope that Logan can help people the way Rob Ramage has, because being a National Hockey League player, especially in a market like Montreal, is going to give him a platform to do so.
Is he one of those guys that's going to be challenging for a spot next year in camp?
Again, you know, I can't speak to timelines. He's had a heck of a year in the American Hockey League. He's got things in his game that he knows that we want him to continue to get better at. And then we have to make decisions about when is the right time if he continues to do that. Is it the beginning of the year? I really believe in not being rigid in what we do and maintaining enough flexibility to make the right decision at the right time.
Speaking of make the right decision at the right time, a lot of people had been wondering since the start of the year how your goalie situation would play out with Jake Allen. Obviously, you make the trade with New Jersey at the deadline, and now that's also obviously provided some more opportunity in the meantime for Caden Primo, who's played really well. Just in terms of getting some of your positions kind of solidified, you know, throughout your lineup, fair to say that you're pretty set now moving forward with Sam and Caden?
Yeah, I feel like it's the more history you have, the more comfortable you get with something. They've been very good. Sam's been good, you know, for 2 years now. Primes last year got a little bit derailed with an injury and some other things that went on, but he'd had a heck of a run in the playoffs the year before. You know, he came up here and we felt with some degree of certainty that he'd get claimed on waivers, and we weren't ready to do that, especially with the circumstances of Sam being a pending UFA, and we could lose two young goalies in the organization. It wasn't a position of strength at the time. So took the unpopular decision, I guess, of having three goalies. And then that was particularly difficult for Jake. You know, I've said it before, but he was incredibly professional about it. And I think Marty has said that it was probably hardest on Jake in terms of just you're a veteran NHL player who's used to things going a certain way and we're throwing a curveball. And at the same time, I'm sure he's inferring, you know, these are their guys and I'm not, which makes it, you know, an extra layer of difficulty for him in terms of managing and playing. But he was, I can't say enough good things about him. And I read somewhere that he had more goalie steals in his time in New Jersey so far than they had in the season up to that point in time. So happy for him and never doubted that in the right environment, he'd be right back to where he was.
You mentioned Marty St. Louis and his, you know, role in this whole process. What he's, you know, working through with your group, maybe the toughest job in the NHL in terms of, you know, you want to compete now, but you're trying to help develop these guys, keep the big picture in mind. And yet he's also someone that didn't have any NHL head coaching experience. What have you seen from Marty in terms of the growth and in himself as a coach?
His hockey acumen was always there. His leadership qualities were there. His social intelligence was already there. His analytical mind, all the qualities that I felt he had that were important in being a head coach. You got to get behind the bench and deal with these things. In terms of experience, I don't want to say it's overstated because it's not overstated. And I think he's a better coach today than he was when we hired him. But it doesn't take away from the fact that he sat behind the bench as a player for over 1,000 games, right? If we look at all of our coaches were short on experience as coaches maybe, but they combined for over 4,000 hockey games.
Also doesn't mean you're going to be successful though.
No, of course not. Of course not. Like he had these qualities. He had the experience of being there. You learn how to manage a group over a season under different circumstances. How do you keep them pushing forward when the whole discussion in this market is about a rebuild and where we're going to be, but they have to live in the present as players. And how do you do that? And how do you take competitive athletes and make them show up and give it their all when they're exhausted and traveling and getting home late and got to play again the next day, knowing that they're not making the playoffs or that people aren't worried about that, or that, hey, everybody's talking, you're the next guy to get traded out of here because you're on an expiring contract. So I think there's been a lot of things for him to balance. He's done a heck of a job. He's the leader of our group. And I think when you have a young group of hockey players, as Nick continues to take on more and more of that leadership, Marty will relinquish more and more of it. But right now, he's a critical leader in our group. And you know, Nick reminds me a lot of Patrice Bergeron. But it took Patrice a long time to become the leader that he was known to be for the end of his career.
I love listening to Marty's perspective. He always just seems to have the right thing to say, even just from a media perspective. I'm sure, you know, being up close and personal in that room, I'm sure that goes a long way.
He communicates so well and not generic in his responses that he's probably the most important person to the fan base from our organization about what we're trying to accomplish.
Do you think because Marty, yourself, and Jeff have been so open and transparent about what you're trying to achieve that I think to me that's the most fascinating part of this whole thing is you're dealing with maybe the most passionate fan base in the league with 24 Stanley Cup banners hanging in your rink, that it's win, win, win. It's not did we make the playoffs this year? It's how deep did we go? I can't tell you how many springs I started in Montreal covering your team in the playoffs, but they're on board. They're in. Like, they get what's happening here. How much do you think that transparency has helped?
The reason I think it helps is the fan base is very educated. So they're passionate, but they're also very educated. If you talk to them and you explain what you're trying to do, I think they're more equipped to understand what's involved and that process. It doesn't mean that they're not going to be impatient or there's a subset of the fan base that expects an 18-year-old to hit the ground running and be as good as Connor McDavid was or another guy, first overall pick who did it. We get that there's the passion side of it too, the emotional side of it. But I think by and large, communicating and letting them know what you're trying to do has been important here. It has, you know, at the end of the day, listen, it's still a results-oriented business. We need to continue to move the ship in the right direction or that acceptance will disappear quickly. But along the way, communicating it certainly makes it easier. I mean, I learned that as a agent. Communicating to players was so important to them, kind of understanding their situation. You know, I've called guys in to talk about where they sit in terms of our organization and trades, and I don't really tell them anything that they don't already know, but I think hearing it from me just gives them a little bit of reassurance.
So I know you hate the timeline question because you've referenced it a few times. Everyone wants to know when, but I want to leave you with this. You can see the pieces kind of being put together, and obviously with the defenseman that you have continuing to take a step forward, it's going to be another piece of the puzzle. 1 year from now, 2025, when we're in the last 2 weeks of the season, will the Montreal Canadiens be challenging for the playoffs?
First of all, let's start with this. If we look at the Eastern Conference, I believe in October, early October, there's every single team in that conference expecting to be challenging to be in the mix. Let's put it that way.
Well, wait a second. That's not necessarily true. You in your heart of hearts, as you've built this thing, you weren't sitting here 1 year ago in October saying that you thought your team would be challenging for the playoffs.
I believe that Columbus thought that coming into this season. I believe that Ottawa's going to believe they're in the mix, and Buffalo's going to believe they're in the mix, and Detroit's going to believe they're in the mix, and the Islanders, and any team that's not currently occupying a playoff spot hopes to be in the mix next season. I feel like there's a lot of things that transpire in a season that are unpredictable. We last four periods with Kirby Dach. In our opinion, had been the best player on our team through training camp and preseason. You know, you can't control a lot of different factors. At the end of the day, what we would hope to be is we're still in the mix. I think we got mathematically eliminated last night. We got to take a step. We got to take another step and continue to take those steps. I think it's critical for our group because we don't want this lethargy to set in that we're not, you know, it's just another season of playing hockey, but we're not playing for anything. We haven't seen that. Like, I think our team's playing the best hockey they've played all year now, even though we got mathematically eliminated with our game against Tampa. But I think the general sense was we weren't making the playoffs. They understood it, but they kept pushing. In order to keep pushing, they got to believe that we're going in the right direction. So I don't know if I'm answering your question or sounding like a lawyer, but at the end of the day, we got to take a step. We'd like to be in the mix. What that means exactly, I can't tell you right now.
I think your fan base believes you're taking a step. I think a lot of us watching from afar believe you're taking a step. We'll see how big of a step that is. Kent, can't tell you how much I appreciate your transparency and openness. Always interesting chatting with you, and wish you all the best. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
I appreciate Kent for taking the time to join Frankly Speaking, and always appreciate the legendary Chantal Maccabee for helping coordinate the interview. You're not going to find a more straight shooter as general manager in the NHL than Kent Hughes. I love that at one point he said, "I apologize if that answer, I sounded like a lawyer." And it's funny because in this case, he wants to be clear in what he's saying. There are no clouded answers. He doesn't have all the answers because sometimes the best you can do as a general manager is make the moves that you feel are correct. And then it takes 2 or 3 years to find out if you were right or not. And then there's always the ability, hopefully on the other end of that, to course correct. So it's been fascinating watching Hughes so far and Jeff Gorton, who for whatever reason, I think is totally comfortable being in some of the shadows in terms of getting that credit and the spotlight. But watching those two work together has really been fascinating because to me, I look at how the Canadians have built this so far and think that they're just kind of, you know, each 3% win that you can stack up one on top of the other, winning on the margins, eventually, hopefully in Montreal, that adds up to something a lot more than that. That'll do it for this episode of Frankly Speaking. We'll leave you with Rip It Up by Orange Juice. Rip it up.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow-up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's going to find the back of the net first, and you're going to want to be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you got to predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh Nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.